Let's read together Ruth chapter 2, verses 1 through 7. In these verses, we have the introduction of Boaz, a major figure in the story of Ruth. In this first section of Ruth chapter 2, we see Ruth gleaning in the fields of Boaz. Ruth chapter 2, verse 1. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a man of great wealth, of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him in whose sight I may find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." Then she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered him, "The Lord bless you." Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" So the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered and said, "It is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab." And she said, "Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves." So she came and has continued from morning until now, though she rested a little in the house. Now let's consider a few background notes, first of all, as we begin our study of this second chapter of Ruth. The two widows, Naomi and Ruth, have come from Moab and are now living in Bethlehem. Naomi, the mother-in-law, has returned home. She had gone to Moab with her husband Elimelech and her two sons during a time of famine. But Elimelech and the two sons had died unexpectedly and prematurely, probably a sign of God's discipline for leaving the land of promise and intermarrying with foreigners from a pagan culture. Ruth, one of the daughters-in-law from Moab, showed great faith and decided to leave her homeland with its pagan gods and come to Israel with Naomi. More importantly, Ruth decided to identify with the people of Israel and the God of Israel. She says to Naomi back there in chapter 1, verse 16, "Your people shall be my people, and your God my God." But now that they have settled in Israel, that doesn't mean that all their problems were solved. What about food and other needs? They have no man of the house to be the provider. It's at this point that Ruth decides to do something about the situation. As the younger woman, she senses her responsibility to care for her aging mother-in-law. Ruth is a great example here of one who takes on responsibility for herself and others, a lesson that we all need to learn. Ruth doesn't sit back and wait for others to help, even though she's in a new situation with unfamiliar surroundings. She doesn't say, "Well, this is Naomi's problem, not mine." No, she realizes her responsibility and takes action. Ruth decides to take advantage of the gleaning laws in Israel. Under God's law, when farmers harvested their crops, they were not to reap the corners of their fields or gather every last stalk of grain or every last apple or every last grape. No, these gleanings were to be left for the poor people of the land. I'm reading Leviticus chapter 19, verses 9 and 10. "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. And you shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God." Also, Deuteronomy chapter 24, verses 19 through 21. "When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not glean it afterward. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow." And so Ruth went out to glean, and she just happened to start gleaning in the field that belonged to Boaz. Boaz was a relative of Elimelech's and therefore becomes a major character in the story of Ruth. And that brings us then to our doctrinal or teaching points for this first section of Ruth chapter 2. Doctrinal point number one: God's plans are accomplished through what the world calls happenstances. God's plans are accomplished through what the world calls happenstances. Now, what's the word happenstance mean anyway? A happenstance, as defined by the dictionary, is a circumstance regarded as due to chance. Look at verse 3. Then she left and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. You think it was just by chance that Ruth happened to glean in the field of Boaz? Of course not. And the inspired writer is not intending here to convey that concept. No. The idea is that from the human perspective, it looked like it was just by chance that Ruth happened to glean in the field of Boaz. But the rest of the book of Ruth shows that this was no happenstance. This was divine providence at work. Remember, Boaz was a kinsman redeemer. As a kinsman redeemer, he had the responsibility to help Elimelech's widow and Elimelech's widowed daughter-in-law. In Boaz, we have a wonderful spiritual picture of Christ, our kinsman redeemer, who took on the responsibility to help us and redeem us. Now, do you think it was just by chance that Ruth gleaned in the field of Boaz? No way. This was no happenstance. This was God's sovereign grace at work. Ephesians 1:11 says that God works all things according to the counsel of his will. God's plans are accomplished through what the world calls happenstances. Now, this was not only true for Ruth and her future blessing. It's true for you and for me. You know that verse in Romans 8:28, which says, "All things work together for good to them that love God and are called according to his purpose." That includes you and me, if we're believers. Illustration. Some of you know that after I left secular employment, I worked with the Young Life Ministry for several years. Now, do you want to hear how that just happened? We just happened to rent a house temporarily where I had made a job change back in the early 70s. This house just happened to be next door to the home of a high school boy who had just become a Christian through the Young Life Ministry. The Young Life Club just happened to be meeting in his home that week, and he invited me to attend. The Young Life leader just happened to mention that they needed someone to teach the Bible to these kids, and did I happen to know anyone who would be willing? I just happened to be readily available. To make a long story short, within a couple of weeks of when we just happened to move into that rented house in Pittsburgh, I was teaching 3 teenage Bible studies. And it wasn't long before the Lord opened the door for us to be involved in the Young Life Ministry full time. Now, do you think that was all just coincidence? Just happenstance? No way. Not a chance. Literally, not a chance. God's plans are accomplished through what the world calls happenstances. You certainly see that teaching right here in the first 5 verses of Ruth chapter 2. Doctrinal point number 2, God's workfare program is better than the world's welfare programs. You got that? God's workfare program is better than the world's welfare programs. More and more these days, we're beginning to hear the term workfare as opposed to welfare. Why? Because the welfare system in this country is not working the way it's supposed to work. There's too many freeloaders. There's too many people looking for handouts. And as long as something is free, most people are reluctant to work even when the work is available. So more and more these days, we're hearing that the welfare system must be overhauled and it needs to be more a workfare program. Well, how interesting. That's exactly what the Bible teaches. In 2 Thessalonians 3:10, we read, "If anyone will not work, let him not eat." And in the Old Testament, we see that God had a welfare program to meet the needs of the poor, but it involved work. It was a workfare program. There were no freebies or entitlements or handouts to sluggards under God's workfare program. God's workfare program is better than the world's welfare programs. God's gleaning laws were a wonderful provision in the law to meet the needs of the poor, like Ruth and Naomi. But Ruth had to go out and glean, and gleaning was work, hard work. But Ruth was willing to work hard. In fact, the foreman in verse 7 says that Ruth took only a short break in the house or the shelter. And notice another thing about God's gleaning laws. The gleaning laws were not a government-run program, but a private responsibility. The individual landowner had the responsibility to leave the gleanings for the poor who were willing to glean. It was not a centralized government-run program where all kinds of graft and red tape could make it ineffective and corrupt. But being decentralized and private, it was more flexible, and the individual landowner was more accountable. God's workfare program is better than the world's welfare programs. You all follow that teaching here in Ruth chapter 2. All right, now what about practical application? Practical application number one. Are we conscious that all blessing comes from the Lord? Are we conscious that all blessing comes from the Lord? In verse 4, Boaz greets his workers with, "The Lord be with you." And they answered him, "The Lord bless you." This not only shows the good relationship between Boaz and those working for him, but it shows that they were all conscious of the fact that all blessing comes from the Lord. Are we conscious that all blessing comes from the Lord? James chapter 1 and verse 17 says that every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes from the Father. Are we conscious that all blessing comes from the Lord? Practical application number two. Are we willing to glean? Are we willing to glean? Gleaning was hard work, and it was the work of the poor. There would be some people in ancient Israel that thought of themselves as too good to glean. They were too proud and too lazy to get their hands dirty and glean. Are we willing to glean? You know, I mentioned to you before that I worked for a few years with the Young Life Ministry. And during that time, the funds ran out of the ministry in our particular area, and I had to get a part-time secular job to make ends meet. I got a job as a technician where I could set my own hours and keep the ministry going. Well, here I was, a former research scientist where I had technicians under me. Now, here I'm working as a technician myself. It was somewhat humiliating, but it was good for me. Are we willing to glean? You know, right now I know two Christian men, at least two Christian men, who are unwilling to glean. They are waiting around for the perfect high-paying job. They are unwilling to glean. Are we willing to glean?